My name is Simon Cox. The date is the 15th of September 2009. The time is 10 past 11 in the morning and I'm interviewing on behalf of the Wellcome Trust. Can I firstly ask you to state your name, age and where you've come from?
My name is Terry Evans. I'm 63 years old and I come from Brighton in East Sussex.
How long have you lived in Brighton for?
About 7 months. Prior to that I lived in Southampton, Nottinghamshire, America. I worked in Sicily, I worked in Saudi Arabia, and I've also lived in Kent and Surrey. But I think I've settled in Brighton now, yes.
What work have you done that made you travel?
Well, for years I'm a biomedical scientist specialising in quality management, process improvement and microbiology. But I spent so long teaching my hospital staff in Saudi Arabia English, I qualified in 2003 to teach English as a foreign language from Cambridge University. So I now work online for a school in Russia.
And what got you into your previous work in the bio?
When I left school, my father gave me the option of finding a job or going back to school, and I hated school. And I never wanted to study again. So I went and worked in an insurance company for 1 year, hated every minute of it, and somehow I got into medicine, and then spent the next 6 years studying.
Did you enjoy your career?
Oh yeah, yes, I enjoyed it very much.
Were there any particular highlights?
I think one of the greatest highlights was the first time I gave a lecture was to the Public Health Laboratory conference in Coventry. And there were, the whole of the Public Health Laboratory Service in England was represented, and I was giving a paper on a particular test we were developing for a disease called toxoplasmosis. And I'd never lectured before in my life, and my boss said, you have to grab their attention from the first second you start speaking. I said, but how? He said, leave it with me. So he helped me write all the speech and that, and I got slides of the tests we were developing. I was working in Tooting at the time, St George's Medical School, and a friend of his, he said, I've got a slide, I'll put it in the first slide and I will run through your slides. The first thing came up, we decided to call this lecture ELISA 9 to 5, because ELISA was the name of the test. And so he said, okay, let's start the first slide. And there's this girl in a skimpy bikini. This is about 40 years ago. I said, I can't show that. He said, yes, you can. He said, you do that and you've grabbed their attention for the whole half an hour of your lecture. And it's very true. And I haven't necessarily used that principle, but any time I've lectured since then, I used to lecture every month in Saudi Arabia. You know, you grab their attention with something they're just not expecting. And it is true, but this is not the same standing on the plinth.
Yeah. How did you hear about the plinth?
I knew about Anthony Gormley. I've seen some of his work. I've seen The Angel of the North. And I think I saw it on BBC, some mention on one morning. So, of course, I logged on immediately to oneanother.co.uk. And that's when I put my name in, my postcode and my sex, and that was it. And here I am today.
And how are you feeling?
Well, it's the inevitable now, so I've been nervous as hell for the last week. But no, it's okay now. You know, whatever happens, happens. I think I've prepared as well as I can.
And what are you going to be doing with your hour?
I'm going to be speaking about the war in Afghanistan. I'm going to read the names of all the soldiers who've died there and mention, of course, all the ones who've been injured, the effects on family and friends, what my thoughts are on the US and British government. I'm stressing a lot on a saying by Georges Santayana. He was a Spanish-born American philosopher and poet. And he said, those who fail to remember the past are doomed to repeat it. And I think it's very true. You know, and I've also got the incidents in the last 200-300 years on cards to hold up. to say we're just repeating the same mistakes that the British and the Russians have made in the last 250 years. And mention help for heroes who raised a lot of money to support injured soldiers. The British Legion, who've kindly provided me with four wreaths and poppies to hand out. My friends handing out the poppies for each soldier who's died. Unfortunately, another one died Sunday. It's 214 now. I thought I'd do something useful with my time on the plinth. Yes, it's voicing my opinion, but to remind people that, you know, it's not just the soldiers who've died, it's all the families they've left behind. The ones who are injured, they've lost limbs, you know, they've lost their eyesight. And it's for what? Nothing. I hope people will listen.
And why this particular call is above others?
I've felt very strongly about this for a long time, about the war in Afghanistan. I've studied it. I suppose I'm an internet geek, really, because I use it every day. And I went back into the history of Afghanistan, and the more interested I became, the more I thought, well, this is what I think I want to do. I had the whole world of subjects to choose from, and I decided this was what I wanted to do, to hopefully make a few people in Britain, just to remind people that, you know, this is going on right now. Maybe another soldier dying right now, unnecessarily, in my opinion. They are my opinions, I accept that, but I think it's important to remind the public, because the only people they hear talking about are the politicians.
Do you feel that your time abroad has influenced your views?
Yes, I worked mainly with Arabs, Filipinos, Indians, Pakistanis, all nationalities in Saudi Arabia. But I know many of the Arabs used to say, there were quite a few Afghans working in Saudi Arabia, they're very violent people. They're uncontrolled, they cannot be controlled. I remember that. I mean, I knew some very nice Afghans. But I think it's true if you look back in the history. There's been continual internal revolt and unrest, and there's warlords. And why America and Britain think they can do any better than all the people before them, I do not know. And I do, it's only a personal opinion, but I think this special relationship between America and Britain doesn't exist. It's a case, I think there was a cartoon in the Times week before last. It was a large Dunkin' Donut, and it was covered in pink icing and sprinkles, and there was one arrow pointing to the donut, America, and one arrow pointing to the hole in the middle, saying the UK. And I think it's a case with the governments. America government says jump, and British government says how high. And the man who just retired from the Ministry of Defence, I can't remember his name, I've got it written down. He said, much longer will the British public tolerate this? It's another Vietnam, in my opinion.
And was this view about the special relationship also brought on by your time in America?
Not really, no. I mean, I did enjoy my time in America. I wouldn't choose to live there. I lived there on and off for 3 years. They have a totally different way of life to us. I don't think there's a special relationship between the people. I'm a European, first and foremost. You know, I don't have a special relationship with America. I have more in common with Europeans. Doesn't mean, I would never say all Americans are bad. But luckily, people in a country aren't the governments. They say every country gets the government it deserves. I'm not quite sure if I believe that.
You mentioned you travelled around an awful amount and you just settled down. Where would you consider your home to be, though?
Wherever I settle at the time. I'd like to settle in Brighton. I like Brighton. It's close to London. It's a nice atmosphere in Brighton. I enjoy it there. It's cheaper than London. But who knows? I mean, if I had the money, I'd probably move to the Lake District or buy a cottage in France, but I don't think that will happen. But I'm a non-materialist. I mean, my life consists of... I'm married, I've got three kids. Well, they're adults now. My life consists of my clothes, my laptop, my camera, a lot of poppies at the moment, four reeds. That's about it. No television. I haven't had television for 4 or 5 months. I suppose the opposite of materialistic is spiritualistic. Yeah, I suppose I'm more of a spiritual person than... Possessions don't interest me.
Could you say why possessions don't interest you?
I don't know. I've seen it, especially in America. You know, we've got to have the latest flat screen television. This one's not big enough. And we've got to have a new car. Why? What you want and what you need in life are two separate things. And I suppose really my needs aren't that great. If I had the choice between having a 50-inch flat screen television sitting on the beach watching the sunset, I'd probably be down the beach watching the sunset. It might be a bit unusual in this modern day and age, but that's me.
What kind of reaction would you like after your time on the plinth?
From who?
From the people watching. What would you ideally like to get out of your house?
I'd just like to remind them that while we're here in the rain, there's soldiers in Afghanistan not living under ideal conditions, not knowing if they're going to die when they walk out the door and go on patrol this afternoon. And for what? You know, I don't think Afghan will change. It's not changed in the last 300, 400, 500 years. Why do America and Britain act so arrogant in thinking that they can change things? Do you have the right to change things? You know, it's another question. Is America, why is their embassy in Iraq the size of Vatican City? It can be seen from space. Why? It must be ultimate control. I suppose Britain was guilty of this 150 years ago with the empire, but at least when Britain left, the Indians are Indians, and peoples tend to stay the same. But America, they have to inflict their culture. And if I can just remind people that while they're here, there's 214 soldiers, I think, died unnecessarily. Hundreds who've been injured, who've lost a limb, who've internal injuries, maybe blind, who are struggling. And on top of that, you've got the families of all the dead soldiers. You've got the families of all the wives, husbands, daughters, sons, of all the ones who've been injured too. So it isn't just the statistic of 214, it's the hundreds of people who've been affected by this. And to what effect? They keep telling us it'll save us from terrorist attacks. I don't believe them. I don't believe either government on this score.
What do you believe?
I believe, I don't know what their ulterior motive is, and I'm not quite sure what they think their ulterior motive is. America wants to bring democracy to the whole world. The whole world doesn't want democracy, whether they like it or not. They've done their best to get elections for Afghans, but there's an old saying, the Lord helps those who help themselves. And you can even see it in Iraq today. There's still fighting, the number of people being blown up and killed between the different factions. And it's worse in Iraq. You've got the Shias, the Sunnis, and some Christians. In Afghanistan, you've got Shias and Sunnis and Christians, and then you've got the warlords, and you've got the drug lords, and you've got separate factions within the tribes. It's just an impossible solution. I believe it's an impossible solution to solve.
You mentioned you called yourself European. What are your feelings about Britain as a country?
Oh, I love Britain. I'm British first and foremost, and European second. I believe in the European Union. There's strength in that size of a body. Might be a bit idealistic thinking they will ever agree on something. I don't think they ever will. But yeah, I'm proud to be British. I'm proud of the soldiers who are out in. That nobody can blame them. They're doing their job. They're doing what they're told. And I think if I can just remind a few British people that they're out there in the heat, it will still be hot there in Afghanistan, not under ideal conditions, not knowing if they're going to live to the end of today, then I've achieved something.
You've obviously researched a lot into the Afghanistan. Is this history a passion of yours?
In some instances, yes. I'm not quite sure if I get it from my son or my son gets it from me. He's an archaeologist. He goes further back in history than me. Yeah, I'm interested not in all aspects of history. History at school bored me to tears. Hated it. I can't remember what happened in 1066. But, you know, if a point of history interests me, then I'll do research into it. Like I just heard on the radio yesterday, a new book being written about the life of Elizabeth I, and it sounded really interesting. I'd like to read that. There's another one about the Emma. And I've forgotten her. Anyway, she was the first woman. She was called the fossil hunter. She lived in Dorset, and she discovered the first complete fossil in the 19th century. And I'm fascinated by this woman, you know, what inspired her in an age when women were restricted in that to become, you know, discover fossils. And she really started that. I'm just curious about everything in life, and that's what life's about.
Where do you think this curiosity came from?
I don't know. My father and mother always used to say I was a nosy kid. I was always poking my nose in, looking here, looking there, asking questions. I never stopped asking questions. Probably came from my father. He was a fellow of the Institute of Mechanical Engineering. And he had great interest in everything in life. And I think I may have inherited that. My son certainly has, my oldest son, even though he now runs a specialist bike centre with a degree in archaeology. But he's happy. He lives over in Hampshire in the New Forest. There's so much to learn about in life. And there's not enough time, that's the problem. There'll never be enough time.
Now that you've moved to Brighton, what would you like to do with your time?
When?
Coming up.
I just want to hopefully jog a few people's memory about what's happening out there in Afghanistan, happened to our soldiers, our British troops. And after that, hopefully, maybe there might be some repercussion from somebody. If just one person listens and thinks about it, then I've achieved something.
You mentioned you had three sons?
No, two sons and one daughter, yeah.
You mentioned one was an archaeologist. What do the other two do?
Our daughter, she's got a double degree in English and geography after going to five different universities. And she now works for the National Health Service down in Folkestone with an IT help desk for NHS staff. My youngest son has a fine arts degree in ceramics, and he's doing computer-aided design at the moment. So they all ended up doing something totally different to what they qualified in.
Do you have a personal interest in the arts?
Yeah. I love art in all its forms.
Anything in particular?
Not really. Barbara Hepworth's one of my favourite sculptors. I think she was wonderful. Such a shame she died in the fire. I think, you know, I wouldn't like to categorise art because art is in the eye of the person looking at it. You know, I mean, the artichoke, the Sultan's elephant and the little girl, that was an incredible experience. I walked backwards around London for 3 hours. I was in Horse Guards Parade when it started out, and I was walking backwards right in front of the elephant for 3 hours around the street till it came, ended up in the National Gallery. And I would love to have seen the spider. I've always been interested in unusual forms of art, and it was a form of art, the Sultan's elephant. It's incredible work, that was. It was the fact that the elephant was worked by about seven or eight people riding it, the little girl was worked by ropes, but it didn't matter. It was the overall effect of those things. Yeah, I love art in all its forms, visual art, music. I think life without art is nothing, really. I feel sorry for people that sort of live in a barren desert if they go through life without having any art to gain enjoyment from.
As you know, this project is about a portrayal of modern Britain. So I'm going to ask if I can just describe yourself at this period of your life.
Period of my life, I'm fairly settled at the moment with my partner. I think people always complained about Britain, all young people today aren't like they used to be. No, they're not. They never were. What is a typical young person? Bad news sells newspapers, unfortunately. It always has. They tried to sell a good news newspaper once and nobody was interested. About 10, 15 years ago. People like bad news. They want their fears of teenagers confirmed. They don't want to hear about teenagers who do something useful and study and enrich their lives and other people's lives. So I don't think life has changed that much. There is a problem with gang violence in some parts of Britain, I appreciate that, and binge drinking and the knife crime, it is a bit worrying. But I think basically the majority of people deep down are good, honest, decent people, whatever their age. I suppose I've got faith in human nature. Maybe it might be misguided, I'm not sure. I'm very gregarious. I'll talk to anybody, you know, especially in Brighton at the weekends, you know, if I see somebody reading a book. Oh, is that a good book? They may not answer me. Jason sometimes says, goodness sake, I said, no, that's the way you learn in life, talking to people. And most people will respond if you're friendly with them. I just love talking to people. I'm not quite sure I love talking on top of the plinth. I've got a larger audience.
Just briefly as well, what other interests do you have in your life?
Photography. I love photography. I love many, many things. I used to play sports, but I'm well past that now. I used to play fencing and ice hockey and ice dancing. Wildlife, nature, reading, radio. So I don't have a television at the moment. My interests cover a vast area and I never have enough time to complete any of it. That's the problem. You have to do the best you can with what time you have.
Do you mind talking a bit more about ice dancing?
Yes, I used to go with my niece. We used to go ice skating Thursday at Streatham. I lived in Sutton at the time. Then we started ice dancing together. Didn't really get anywhere with it. We just enjoyed doing it together. Then with work, I was working in hospitals, so I took up fencing instead. And I kept fencing until there's one of the Olympics. I think it was a Russian. He had a fault in his mask. And the epee went through the mask and killed him. And my wife, I was married at the time, she said, I want you to stop that. And I did, yes, I decided it was time. That, and with work as well in hospitals, it wasn't, you know, I just didn't have the time to continue it. Yes, it was a bit risky.
And you also mentioned photography. What kind of landscape?
Landscape, close-ups of birds, wildflowers. My son's, eldest son's wife and I were crazy about lichens and mosses. I love those. Anything. I don't usually take photos of people. I like things, the countryside and the animals in the countryside. I might try and snap somebody quickly if I can get them, but not a posed picture like the Japanese lining up in front of the Grand Canyon or the Bodleian Library, and you know, you can't see the Bodleian Library for 15 Japanese. No, I'm not into that sort of photography.